Okay. Well, welcome everyone to the Tuesday, March 5th general discussion of the Josephine County Board of Commissioners. Lily Morgan is not here today. She's in Washington, D.C., fighting for all that Josephine County wants. So, on today's agenda, we have a report from the annual update from the Illinois Valley Watershed Council. Mr. Kevin O'Brien, you want to join us?
Sure. Thank you, Commissioner. Mm-hmm. I am Kevin O'Brien. I'm the Watershed Coordinator, lead staff for the council out there in Cape Junction. So I thought I'd give you just kind of honestly, a very brief, just a thumbnail sketch of where we've been, kind of what we did for our summer vacation, kind of a report last year,
right.
And then where we're headed or where we seem to be headed this year, and then a few challenges, just to make you folks aware, to make sure that you don't think, well, that so that misery can enjoy equal company or whatever there. That's not all roses.
And no blind spots.
Hopefully right. Not. So this last year we did finish our multi-phase restoration work on Dunn Creek, which actually that drainage is entirely in California.
Really? That comes down off the mountain over there, huh?
It sure does. Yes, Commissioner. And so all the benefits are in Oregon. It's kind of a landlocked thing for California. Still had to make contact with the different regulatory folks and things like that to do our work. But actually the benefit for our community out there, because it is part of our source area for City of Cape Junction drinking water, and then also for anadromous fish, all come through Oregon.
So it dumps into the Illinois?
The East Fork.
East Fork, okay. All right.
So it's just, if you're familiar a little bit with the geography out there in the valley, it is out past Four Corners, out past Tequilma.
Okay.
And the project sites, it was three different consecutive years that we did different things, is right adjacent to the Sunstar community out there.
Okay. That was going to ask, you know, because they're pretty active out there.
They definitely are.
But they're... in a really good way, because I've been very pleased with some of the stuff they're doing out there. They're very cognizant of what's going on in their area, and they're in firefighting. They're right on it. And,
well, yes, they are.
Because
they have their own little unit and everything.
They get their own unit and fire truck, and it's amazing to watch them go.
And there was one close to them this year again.
Yeah,
you know, this past year.
Yeah.
In fact, all 3 years we did visit with them and engage with them early on in the process, as far as what our goals, what our objectives were, and actually got their involvement on the projects, especially the first 2 years. This last year, we built a side channel, about a quarter mile side channel, and those have a lot of, I want to keep this to a thumbnail, but I'll let it be for questions, a lot of good things with side channel creation when you can do it well. It bleeds off some of the energy of the main channel. It provides... anadromous fish, salmonids are a lot like us. We don't want to work all the time and be out there beating the current
rest
and everything.
Area.
Kind of a little, pull into the rest area. You know, it's a little slower moving water.
Yeah.
In what we like to do and what we've noticed in nature and try and mimic is a lot of the spawning occurs. A lot of the spawning and even the rearing habitat that occurs then over the next summer and that occurs in these side channels.
Mm.
So we...
Now, when you're... No, go ahead. I'll have a question when you get done.
Please. I enjoy it. So we did finish that. We're working closely, as we have for many years, under a formal arrangement and agreement with Forest Service, but they have a strategic plan. They have several strategic plans, but they have a Watershed Restoration Action Plan, Aquatics Action Plan, commonly called the RAP, for the East Fork Illinois River. The East Fork of the Illinois River and its little
The whole bit of it? Wow.
And so there's projects identified, and that part of the Rogue Basin actually has the very highest what's called intrinsic potential. The natural potential of the land and the waters for coho salmon. And so a lot of that is a function of gradient. throughout the Rogue Basin, the Illinois Valley, and the East Fork drainage. So there's a lot of focus put on it, a lot of energy, a lot of resources going that way. Mm-hmm. So that wrap was developed a handful of years ago or so, and we're actively pursuing with the Forest Service, doing projects to make things good through that plan out on the ground. So we finished up at Dunn Creek. I'll share with you in a minute where we're shifting over to. Actually, in just a minute, because we did do a full design package last year as well out on Page Creek, which, if you're familiar with the treehouse area out there.
I've never been out there, hear a lot about it, though.
Yeah, that's the road that goes up there. Well, it's just beyond and just onto the public lands, the lowest part of the public lands that the Forest Service is responsible for managing. We're starting that project there. We have plans, and I've been actively engaged with the landowner adjacent to continue on the private lands because there's a lot of opportunity, and he's very willing to work with us. And we may get some water savings and some irrigation efficiency for him that will in turn help the stream and help the fish and, you know, where all the birds start singing and Cinderella, you know, kind of thing.
Dances around.
Right?
Bambi, all the little deer named Bambi.
Exactly. So we did partner again after a few years' absence of a direct partnership with the University of Oregon's Resource Assistance for Rural Environments program. It's run out of their planning department. And what that, without going into great detail, we basically pay U of O a little chunk of money, but in return we get about an 11-month employee that's fresh, usually a 4-year degree comes with them. They're going into grad school. They get graduate credit for doing what they do, and they're a highly charged individual usually, and their vetting process is superlative. And so we have a person right now that we've hired to be our volunteer coordinator. I've wanted for years to establish a firm volunteer program and outreach and education. And her task is actually to recruit in people that will hang in the area, that are from the area, and that will take on various... I'm really trying to keep my hands off of it so I don't make it into what I think it might want to look like. That said, I've given some general vision and direction. I'd like, you know, an outreach and education, whether we have volunteers that read at the libraries to the kids about different environment, how to save water at home, how to brush your teeth, that kind of thing with minimal water use. Also, maybe a department that is very engaged. There's a lot of people that like doing activities on the weekends and stuff. So maybe a little tree planting group or things like that, that people can go out, trash pickup, those types of things. This person is tasked with recruiting and kind of bringing in what hopefully will be a cohesive team. We even rented a space next to our new offices and for that team to live in. And that program has actually gained a lot of traction. We've had a lot of engagement with the community and different groups. Our awareness is growing. You know, we've been around many years. The district has been around going on 75. You know, and the Watershed Council has been going on for almost 25. But through this process, there's a significant bump in some of these groups out there. And, oh, that's what you guys do. Oh, you want to do this now. So it's been really good. And in the upcoming year, I'll just say we're looking to extend her appointment, a lady by the name of Sienna Fitzpatrick, and she was a graduate of Loyola in Chicago, Jesuit school, and she's from, like, Massachusetts, I think. She's back east, but she's a little fireplug.
Making her way across the country.
Yeah, doing in a good time of her life to do that kind of thing, too.
Sure. You know?
So she's enjoying Oregon. She wants to stay on. We'd love to have her. Turns out the job, you know, I've never been known to tackle too much or it'd be bigger than what I thought it was. It's a big job, and so it makes sense, actually, to extend her and have her grow the thing that she started now a little bit more. And it looks like we will be able to bungle together the resources to be able to keep that going. Did develop a full design package for continuing that work on that East Fork wrap that I mentioned, now on Page Creek that I also mentioned. And we're going to be doing things that improve aquatic organism passage. There's a small check dam that lives on the public lands. that a private individual downstream, the one I referred to a few minutes back, uses to get his water rights. And we've got a little more stream-friendly alternative to be able to replace that check dam with, provide him his full water right. He won't miss a drop of water during his irrigation season. So we're going to replace that. We're going to put in a series of structures up along the creek. It was a heavily mined system. It's just really hailed out. But we're going to try...
Hailed out?
Well, that's an old North Dakota term.
I was going to say, I'm not sure I know
what that
means.
Really destroyed. You know, okay. On the landscape, I mean, yeah. There's a lot of trees on it and stuff. But if you saw, it's a situation, Commissioner, where the floodplain, the stream is very disconnected with its floodplain. And a stream needs that to be able to safely move water. Otherwise, it just becomes a chute. And so while we're trying to reconnect it to its floodplain, or one of the tactics and techniques that's been proven to work is putting different structures in. They provide habitat, some of those little mini resting areas. They help grade gravels in that. But at the same time, if you remember the old water beds when they first came out, and then when they put the baffles in them, I equate putting large wooden streams in that to kind of putting baffles in the waterbed. It serves to keep it calmer and that type of thing. Then there's a couple of culverts upstream of that on the public land. One's on private, actually, and we have permission to remove it, that weren't designed really that well for the long term and have become perched. And so there's a jump that's a barrier for fish passage, and those two are due to come out. So we have that all designed, and we've gotten
some... What do you replace a culvert with? You've actually put a bridge in?
You know, Commissioner, in that case, that culvert was part of the old cowboy mine. It was on the private, really weird piece of an inholding. And that landowner hasn't used that road. It's a road to nowhere at this point. So when we contacted
him... Mm-hmm. Culvert out, you're denying access to say that guy doesn't want to use it anymore and he sells it. If you take that culvert out, I'm just being facetious here, I'm asking mm-hmm. a question. You remove that culvert, you have devalued that property for that guy dramatically because now I don't even get to it.
Well, you can get to the property. This is actually on the property and on mm-hmm. a side road that evidently back when they logged part of it, because it's all brushed over in that now. And there's no real good logical need for many, many years for a culvert along in that piece. It's an interior. It's not a road into the place or anything like that. It's within his property okay. and across the creek.
Okay, well, that's what I mean, because I think... it would be listed as a taking if you said, nope, we're going to pull that culvert out, and I'm sorry, you don't have access to your land anymore.
Oh, and the approach wasn't like that at all. We pointed out to him, and that landowner said, I can see where that's tough on fish, yeah. and I don't need it, I haven't needed it, I don't foresee needing it.
I live on Gilbert Creek,
uh-huh.
and they put a bunch of logs in and restored it up above me,
uh-huh.
and this last gully washer, all the logs are gone.
Well,
I don't know where they went.
The nice thing
is, there's a lot of bridges, and we just redid Savage Street up here with a fish ladder and all kinds of stuff. It was a pretty expensive rebuild, mm-hmm. and I don't know where those logs went, but they aren't there anymore. They
right.
did some restoration up above, and I'm looking at a restoration project between Midland and Savage because to protect our investment with that fish ladder and the habitat. Mm-hmm. We did a lot of time and effort on the habitat for that. I used to have steelhead in Gilbert Creek,
mm-hmm.
and I haven't had in years. And yet, it's all my fault because I own a home along there. Doesn't have anything to do with ODOT putting de-icer, and it comes down through the storm drain system and dumps right into Gilbert Creek up at Morgan Lane. I didn't have anything to do with killing the fish. But I used to have steelhead spawn right below my house, and I haven't had that in 15 years.
It'd be interesting to see over time. What we've noticed on wood moving, you know, you may be aware, wood floats.
Sure.
And so you get high enough water, and if it isn't or a series, you know, the conditions being what they are, it does move around sometimes. We have a pretty good way of keying it in and locking it in between trees when we're not keying it in, digging it in and putting a few stones on it to ballast it. What we've found is it generally will stack up in other areas. You know, after the 1964 flood, a 100-year event, the folks and the authorities went around and they did see a lot. You know, that was a huge purge. And sure. The system got really cleaned. And what was noticed was a lot of large wood around bridge abutments and roads failed and things like that. And the authorities attributed those failures to that wood. And what they so millions of dollars then were spent in the next 15 and even 20 years before it was stopped, because what they found is even smaller events then, that water wasn't slowed down, that the purpose, you know, the professors and all the educator types were trying to tell people, whoa, you're screwing with the natural process and function here, and that's intended to help slow down the velocities and the energy of the stream. And sure enough, you know, it was enough, and there was enough cut banks and everything else, all the degradation that's happened, now we spend millions of dollars recovering. You know, they did what's called stream clearing, and there's even copies of old publications still around that how to stream clear and how to pull wood out. It's just bizarre to look at. So,
I have a situation where the stream last year took 3.5 feet of my bank.
What part of town? Just out of...
Right up here on Prospect.
Okay.
And this year, it didn't do too bad. I probably lost about a foot and a half. But I just spent $26,000 jacking my house up. Because it's going into the state of Oregon's waterway.
Have you talked to your local watershed coordinator?
Don Miller, you know Don Miller at the Irrigation District, GPID? He's put me in contact with him, and we're going to work on a project. That stream bed, instead of going down between the houses like it used to, now it goes like this, and it's getting more like this, and like this, and like this. And as Carvey got the house downstream from me, about four houses is ready to topple in. And we weren't allowed to touch it. They said, no, there's nothing you can do down there in the stream bed. Well, they put rocks in there, and they had a core engineers up there and spent I don't know how much money trying to get that thing in.
Well, it sounds like you're in touch with the right people that can...
I think it'll happen eventually, but I get real, you know, I get real apprehensive. When, like, for instance, the people across the street, they had all the permits and everything, and they put a couple of those logs in there to slow the stream down, they're gone.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to, when you're dealing with hydraulics, you better put more than a couple of rocks to hold it there, because I've got a chunk of concrete that's twice the size of that desk that came in 3 years ago, and it's still there,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not allowed to touch it. It's concrete, it's got rebar sticking out of it, and that causes the stream to split and wash out the banks on both sides. I'm not allowed to go down there and jackhammer it out.
Yeah, if you could pull it out by hand.
I can't.
Right.
It's not, you're not going to move
that. If you could do it by hand, you'd be okay with doing it. That's the way Oregon Department of State Lands views that. Same with wood. If you can actually take it out, not advising it, but if you can deal with it with a chainsaw on that, you can deal with that kind of thing. If it takes heavy equipment, then you're into a whole permitting world.
Right. Well, I'm only getting just, and there's my problem is that I only get part of the story. I'm not getting it from the people that really know the story.
You know, and
there's always an alternative on page two.
Sure. And just to give you a little, the way that we try and do it out there and what's, you know, more and more practice, I hope, is, you know, if your property is down here and up on his end, but the stream and where, you know, some of that velocity picks up and that water, if you start doing projects here and then maybe down there and that, you've already got a good head of steam going on that stream to pick up. So what we try and do is get up as high in the system, up on his end of the creek, and start what we call zippering down.
And that's what they've done. They've done up by Gilbert Creek Park. That's all been done.
Okay, and then you try and bring it in. And then there's a little bit more reasonable expectation that things can stick around. But even above the park, and I live up on that end of town, on North Hill Drive. And, you know, you have to get high up enough in it to where it's going to kind of keep it mellow for as long as possible. And then some of our systems that blow in here, like the one last week, they're just intense.
Yeah, that's, I call it front page weather, so it's, we're not going to do that. The marijuana and water, you're creating all this watershed and everything, and then I'm hearing stories of marijuana growers pirating water out of the Illinois River to where it's just a trickle at the end of the, by the time summertime's over.
Well, it's pretty much a trickle most years anyway, if you look at the hydrograph.
I'm asking that question. Because are you making sure that everybody upstream is doing all they're supposed to do so that you are putting a quality product into the Illinois River and that it's being pumped out to put marijuana?
That's a fair question. No, we're not. Partly because that's not our purview.
Okay.
The Oregon Water Resources Department are the ones that are responsible for regulating and enforcing Oregon state water law.
Right.
And that is a complaint-driven system still, and so it's when their complaints come in that the water master goes out. We are, however, in fact, the district is hosting a illegal water use seminar coming up at the Selma Center, I believe, is what she's targeting. And so we do try and do educational things. What I've been hearing more and get calls on are a lot of the trimigrant camps that have developed on some of these grows and are on seasonal streams and that and camping out and having...
Dumping their sewage into it.
Correct. And that having a lot larger impact. You know, from what I pretend to understand about those operations, you know, one of the fears early on was the chemicals and what is it going to do to our water aquifers.
Right.
That's also a fair concern in my mind. But what we've seemed to notice and what we've been made aware of is a lot of those fertilizers and amendments are so damn expensive in that they're actually quite careful in their application. They're not over-applying in most cases. We have heard of extra water being taken out, and there's probably more of that than has ever. But on the public lands and that, where some of the illegal grows were long before it was legal, things like that were happening back in the day.
And I don't mean to jump the tracks here, but I know up there, like in Tacoma, they don't care where that fire starts. They're just going to go put it out. And you're dealing with U.S. Forest Service land, and the U.S. Forest Service seems to have adopted a let-it-burn policy. How does that help? How does that affect your watershed? If, for instance, a fire were to start somewhere near your watershed, you've taken out all these culverts and because you didn't want to have people in there, and now they can't get to the fire to put it out. What is going to be the policy? And when the U.S. Forest Service says, no, we don't care if that's your watershed, we're going to let it burn anyway because it needs to be burned off so that we don't have a continual burn because they use fire a lot. And how does that affect everything you've done could go out the window because fire does not recognize riparian area along stream banks. You know, a logger does. He's got a 300-foot setback and so on and so forth. The fire does not. It goes through there like Grant through Dixie. And I don't want to see you guys spend all this time and effort and then have the U.S. Forest Service tell you that somebody can't go in there and put that fire out or that they aren't going to. And they're not going to let, because it's U.S. Forest Service, it's BLM. BLM contracts with the Oregon Department of Forestry, who has an attack and suppress policy that U.S. Forest Service does not have. And we're working on that. In fact, Commissioner Morgan back there for public lands and wildfire element back in Washington, D.C. right now. But I want to make sure that your watershed is protected from policies like that on the national level. So that's something you probably ought to look into a little bit, and maybe you know be an ally because I see an effect on you guys. You guys put a whole bunch of time and effort into this watershed to make sure it's going to remain pristine, and then a fire comes through there and it's gone. And you go, "What happened there?" Well, we had to let it burn because of U.S. Forest Service. Mm-hmm. And you know, Taylor Creek Fire could have been put out by a logging company that was up there, but they were told to stand down. They said, "No, no, we got it." Mm-hmm. And that ended up being merging with the Klondike Fire that they couldn't get to because it was a roadless area. And the next thing you know, it's 196,000 acres burns again for the second year in a row. And so that's, you know, I want to...
Well, I appreciate you your efforts.
I appreciate what you're doing because I think there's huge value in it.
Bring a lot of money into the community with what we do. Millions of dollars through in my time. I'm going on 16 years this summer now that they still let me have a key. But in that time, there's been several million dollars we've brought into the valley that's been spent locally and within Grants Pass, CNN, and when you count Medford and that.
Where did your funding come from?
A lot of state funding through the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, a lot from the U.S. Forest Service here recently on this work on the East Fork Wrap, some non-traditional sources, some different nonprofits that are repositories and administer different funds from different outfits that all pool their money together and need somebody to run it. So we're entirely grant funded.
Okay.
And so we put in for, in fact, I leave this meeting and go write some more money. It's kind of, I guess, a form of counterfeit almost, but write another grant this morning. And, you know, it's, well, I met a guy one time, and he was a painter, and he said, "I got to go paint some money here." And he was a good painter. I can't remember his name. He was a Western artist, and I thought, that's kind of cute. So anyway, we just hunker down, and you don't always get funded with everything you put in.
Oh, absolutely.
And so it just depends on the... So we do what we can, and I appreciate your concern about those kinds of policies. Quite honestly, those are too big for us and outside of... so we occasionally will write a letter of recommendation kind of thing or take a stand, but we really do try, and what we've found to be a good... We almost play Switzerland to a fault. And we let people do their deal because if we get into, we're not regulatory at all. And we're trying to help the land, the community, and everything, the economy for the area out there. And so we kind of just deal with things as they fall.
Well, I just hope that someday you're not standing out there amongst the charred ruins going, "Gosh, we probably should have said something."
Well... And, you know, a lot of things have been said, and there's a lot of side conversations, and in the end, it's almost like, well, damn it, it's job security, because now we got to go fix the damn thing again. And it's a horrible way to have to... total reactionary...
Yep, I've heard that.
It's not preemptive at all.
At a level way higher than you and I are, and I absolutely brought it up. I said, that's a... hell of a way to make money is burning your natural resources. Because you only get to do it once every 20 or 30 years. And if you want to put all your money into fire suppression rather than fire prevention, the only thing is you have the same amount of money changing hands, except one at the end of the day, you still have your natural resources, be it mining, be it forestry, be it whatever it is, you still have those resources.
Mm-hmm.
You have tourism, you have all the opportunity that unburned section of land gives you. Mm-hmm. And the other way, sure, Herman Bear Trigger Company, HB Company, and because Herman's got, he's got a fire company. Mm-hmm. Grayback Forestry.
Mm-hmm.
Those people are necessary, but I say pay them and move them into the woods ahead of the fire instead of behind it.
Sure.
And then we spend the same, or not quite the same, but we also save the resource, and we save what you've worked so hard for. Because it'll all go up in smoke if that's all they want to do is sit back and let that fire get big enough to name it and design a T-shirt.
I'm sorry.
I'm just worried about all the work you do.
Mm-hmm.
Because you were doing that work is to save the fish, save the habitat, save what's there, make it look decent. The opportunity, the opportunity that's there. But if you don't sell, I guess it was probably they got a little bit of tourism after the aftermath of Mount St. Helens. People wanting to go visit that devastation to say they've seen it firsthand. But that's over. That was a very short-lived thing. And I don't want they don't go up there now just to see the reforestation projects and all that other stuff. That's just done. But it's quite costly to do that. But that's a cost I'd like to avoid.
Glad to hear you're on it.
Yeah. Keep that in mind, because that is certainly something that could happen with... I think that when they expanded to include the cave's chalet up there, they absolutely signed the death knell for that. That is so overforested and overburned up in there that if you ever got that going, you're not going to get it put out. And it's going to go up through there. And you can't, now you can't log it, you can't manage it. Timber management is something. But you're not allowed to touch it now. It's got to remain pristine, which we've been doing for 40 years, and it hasn't worked out real well in most cases. So I think it's just, I'm really concerned about it. I'm old enough to where I probably don't have to worry about it, probably never going to see it happen.
Or you can see it next year.
Good point. So although I just want to make sure that all your hard work, you get to see it it's intended to do, rather than just get burnt up because somebody didn't buck the system with
the U.S. Smokey's done a good job, a real good job, almost too good a job, and so...
I heard that, and I don't agree with that, but don't go there with me.
Well, as far as fire suppression, and, the fire is all bad.
No, fire is not all bad.
But what I'm saying is the approach that was taken, and Smokey the Bear, and we clamped down so much on, but we didn't stay up with thinning and doing what, we removed, and this is a well-known story by everybody at this point. So it's a big thing. The whole Western United States, and then especially our great Pacific Northwest, where we have so much biomass that forms. We have so much fuel all the time. So it's a definite issue, and definitely needs to be stayed on. Just to keep moving through, one last thing on where we've been. We've been working closely with the city of Cave Junction now, and that's increasing, ramping up here on trying to improve conditions for their... through our projects for source water and for treatment, trying to maybe help reduce some of the treatment costs, because cleaner water is cheaper to treat. And so with some of the excessive sediments that come in, especially during our systems, but even in the summertime and that, it creates an environment where you have more turbidity in the water, more fine sediments that suspend and then grow other things and algae and everything, and just take more to treat to get it drinkable for people. So some of our projects that we've been working on are trying to help that situation, and we're taking that partnership to the next level, and actually we'll be applying for a grant for them. There'll be a name on the grant here in the next week, because I got that one due end of next week, that we were actually invited to put in for. And so that's exciting that we're taking our relationship with the city even that much further down the road. Things that are coming up in this year and on out a little ways is it's time to redo our strategic plan. I mentioned that we're kicking off, starting this year during our in-stream work period, the first phase of our Page Creek Aquatic Restoration Activities Project out there in Tequilma. Have been working a little bit with the Southern Oregon Land Conservancy to develop a small project by the first bridge on Holland Loop on Sucker Creek there. There's an outside bend that's carving away. There's a pretty good cut bank, about an 8-foot cut bank. That property that outside bend lives on has a conservation easement on it through Southern Oregon Land Conservancy. We were approached by them, and so I'm trying to see what we can do small scale that might be worthwhile. And yet that particular reach, to my eye, has a lot of potential where maybe we make a little bit bigger project and have some of that moving up the stream. Because where you have a problem... Oh, I'm sorry, that's a recording thing, isn't it? So you're going to get a text.
Spit the earbud down.
Where you have a problem that, it's kind of, your problem is actually upstream. It's presenting or it's symptomatic down here, but you have to take a look upstream. And so that's what I'm starting to do with that. We are ramping up our community engagement. A lot of what has bubbled up initially is fire subject, and so we're meeting with people on fire and that, And that volunteer outreach program I spoke of is going to hopefully grow legs a lot more this year now. We got a good start this past year, looking to go further with that program. We've gotten into a lot more regional capacity building, like with the Rogue Basin Partnership and the Applegate Partnership, and trying to see if at scale we might be able to do some things that we weren't able to do or that they weren't able to do, but working together, maybe we can get some bigger dollars and some more across boundary lines for watershed councils and that we might be able to do things on a system basis, the Rogue system. And then last but not least, as far as things that are on my plate to work with and report to you this morning anyway, has been working with SFI a little bit to develop a project that would remove the dam that they use to gain some of their drinking water out at the center.
SFI?
Siskiyou Field Institute, Commissioner, okay. I'm sorry.
No problem.
And I live in a bunch of TLAs, three-letter acronyms and that.
Yeah.
So I forget myself sometimes. But anyway, we've been working more closely with SFI to kind of help them. That's not within their wheelhouse, if you will. And so we're trying to get something together. And we may have been able to secure some Fish and Wildlife Service funding to develop a design to replace that dam with what's called a roughened channel. That basically will serve the same purpose and yet allow fish access up there. So want to get that in place.
Does the dam have a ladder or any diversion around it at all?
No, but we found there was a fairly recent habitat survey done, and there's a lot more fish a lot higher up in that system that have now made this little dam a little bit higher priority from the standpoint of the benefit that could be had for fish. And so there's a little bit of, wow, we didn't think it was like that, so maybe we do need to,
going back to dams up this far, and that Savage Rapids Dam, I had to come out, boy, those fish can't maneuver that. And I said, have you ever been through Mule Creek Canyon and Blossom Bar and Tyee and Rainy Falls? That dam up there is nothing more than a bump in the road to them, mm-hmm. Because they've gone through all of that without even a hitch.
Well, this is about a 15-foot push-up dam.
Well, that's a lot.
And that's actually an earth embankment dam. And juveniles don't get it. There's nothing that goes.
Question.
Goes up that
way. Is that an irrigation dam?
No, it's for water.
Just for water.
Just for drinking water. Some of the stuff that they, they have a whole educational program out there
so
at that
institute. If you took the dam out and the water that's stored behind it that is used for drinking, mm-hmm. What are you going to do, pumps again?
No, actually this roughened channel, if you can envision kind of a steepened riffle, okay. If you will, and that's probably for a 15-foot dam, it's going to have to extend a ways, but generally they seem to be at about a 4-4.5% gradient, so it's a pretty good steep slope there. Mm-hmm. But across that length of that, Commissioner, starting at the lower end, you run a as I pretend to understand the engineering behind it, and I'm not an engineer, but you place a series of rock or boulder weirs about every 20 foot, and this one down here is at this elevation, this one's up here, and
graduated.
You just stair step it, and then you put different size material within it. It actually serves as a dam.
It's basically a stair step system up to gain your 15 feet.
And it brings that water up with it as it goes. So the fish don't really, other than it's a little bit of a, little bit of a climb for them, but it's a hell of a lot better than what they had before that.
Yeah, okay.
So that's kind of... Mm-hmm. You betcha. And then challenges that we're having, I'll just jump onto your regulatory processes. Become even more involved and costly just when you thought it was impossible for that to happen. Found that out year before last on Bridgeview Project when we were trying to help Renee save that piece of, I don't even remember the variety of the grapes, and I should, that they were real, with a G anyway, now it's bothering me. But anyway, when we got in there, we found out due to a delay, actually, with one of a federal agency that's involved with removal fill permitting, was a little bit late getting us a reply back, and we over the course of, had it been handled on the Friday when it actually should have even been done earlier that week, that next Monday, the sun had set on Friday afternoon, and now we were back in the world of DEQ and had to pay another about $1,000 to get, you know, another level of review on that permitting. And that's being talked about now, but there's a, it's become quite onerous, some of the DEQ stuff and in the way that the law is set up. So we that's just one of our realities that we have to deal with in that. Capacity funding continues to be, you know, as I explained, we're grant funded in that. And then projects that I'm working on now to develop, there's no funding until you get the money. People are real willing to, you know, if you've got it developed enough to where now you need to make a design, get some designs together, they'll give you funding for that. You got the designs together and you want to build it, you get a pretty fair chance if you, you know, pass the red face test and sell the project that getting it built. What's tougher to get are those capacity funds that help me meet with the landowners, me do all the phone calling and some of the early work on that. So capacity funding continues to be a challenge, and we're looking to some non-traditional sources and trying to solidify that, but that continues to be an issue for us, capacity funding. We're not on anybody's budget line, you know, and so that makes it difficult. And I just got a little plug. We continue to meet on the fourth Thursday of the month, third Thursday on the holiday months in November and December, and the council meets at 5 o'clock out there at our offices. So, okay. Any other questions or anything?
Yeah. Mr. Fowler has been really taking on the Illinois Valley as his...
He showed up out there.
As his stepchild.
I remember what he looks like, so yeah. I got him buttonholed here.
I think that he, you know, Commissioner Hare lived in the valley and mm-hmm. was born and raised out there, so of course he had a vested interest there, but I think Commissioner Fowler is going to probably take it to the next higher level, because me being born and raised here, I take an awful lot for granted, and, you know, it was a long time before I ever floated the Rogue River, the Lower Rogue, and I've lived here. Everybody else spent thousands of dollars to do that, and I, to my backyard, hadn't done it. Well, I think Commissioner Fowler is going to have... He's got a little bit more enthusiasm than just probably the locals have. And that's, you know, it's good to watch him work. I'm excited about it because the statement has been bannered around about, oh, yeah, we're just a redheaded stepchild out here. Nobody cares. But we spend a lot of time out there in the valley, and that's...
A lot of people do. A lot of people, when it's time to go swimming or whatever in the summertime. Yeah. They're heading
there's a lot of activity going on out there if you just pay attention. Really, you know, they have a lot of activity going on.
People like heading out to the Illy. You know, it's good country. It's pretty.
Yeah.
And it's right in our backyard. You know?
Yeah.
So. I love it. A couple questions. There's a piece of Parks property called Pine Cone. You familiar with that one?
It's a place off of Rocky Dale?
Yes.
Barely.
People park and party and swim. I didn't know if you had an opinion on that land swap with the BLM. It probably wouldn't change a whole lot. They might put a fence up to keep people from going. Who knows? But and the other one is mineral rights and mineral methods. There's our mining committee is starting to take on the state and go, okay, it's been too far too long. We'd like to get back to some reasonable, you know, recreational, not necessarily professional, mining. And do you guys have any opinions on the mining in these streams?
I think with any land use activity, I think as long as they're well thought out and can be done, I think mining can be done with good stewardship techniques. And I'd like to see, we actually did a project on Upper Sucker Creek that we involved a placer mine on Robert Sr.'s dead now, but with his son too, Bobby Carlin. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they donated about $180,000 worth of equipment time. Of course, they were going to get to mine in the main channel of Sucker Creek, which hadn't been mined in decades because we were realigning the main stem because it was straight as a bowstring through there. But I'd like to see more partnerships where miners are involved in some of the work. I think there are opportunities where that can happen. But as far as an opinion on that or whatever, just we'd like to see it done, you know, in a well-managed fashion, that there's thought given to what are the impacts in that. And I think those activities can occur with those things.
Well, you mentioned sediment in stream beds and this, that, and the other thing. I would think that'd be an opportunity for a suction dredging or whatever, could remove some of that sediment, and they get to look for the gold at the same time.
It could be
that. You know, right? I mean, yeah. You just say, yeah, this is an area that we have an issue with for the next 100 feet in either direction.
Sure.
And, you know, you want to suction dredge on that, just knock yourself out. But don't put the sediment back in the creek, you know, put it up on the bank or something. I don't know how that all works. I'm not a miner.
Me neither.
Trish probably knows more about color than I do when it comes to mining.
I've used a pan a few times.
Oh, yeah, so she uses a pan and a little dredging thing, and the oil on the side of your nose to pick up the gold flakes and stuff.
I love it. Well, and looks like you have a full advisory council out there. Since we just swore some in, is there any holes in that? Are you getting enough?
We have one seat right now that we've had. You know, we recently filled one of them. We have a city presence again, and we've always, since our inception, have wanted to have a city presence on the council, and we now have Travis Robbins, the public works director, is on our council.
Oh, good.
And has been active. There is one other seat. We are having a little bit of, when vacancies occur, we have a little bit of a hard time filling them, but we generally bungle something together.
Okay.
So,
well, thank you for your long time service. Thank your group as well.
I get to wake up every day and do what I love to do.
Yeah, you like that.
Well, and we.
So do we.
Exactly. We have
there you go. Some days you love it more than others, right?
Yeah.
But Josephine County isn't short on people that want to do something.
Mm-hmm.
There's just people out there that have a passion like you do that want to get involved and want to play the long game and not just yell and scream. But, you know, take the time and find out, work within the system you're given, and try and change things when you can't. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Commissioners, and thank you so much for your time and to the administrative staff for setting me up to be here today.
Thank you. Bet. All right, well, the door's always open.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Appreciate
it. Glad to meet you.
We'll meet again.
You're a very good presenter. I've got to tell you that right now.
Yeah. Very good. Keep us in the loop on inviting us to those meetings.
I most certainly will.
We don't miss a beat.
Again, thanks for the time.
Thank you.
You bet. All right, well, let's look back to the agenda, and item two is Public Health Quarterly Update. Mr. Michael.
Morning, Commissioners.
Morning.
Sorry, I thought I was a little further down the list.
Oh, here is
fine, buddy.
Here you go.
For Lillian.
Right over.
All right.
Okay. So I have a separate line on, but I think we're covering that next. So you haven't seen this before, Commissioner.
Nope.
But this is a standard briefing that I give each quarter. It runs through each of our programs, at least most of them, and we'll be doing some updates to it. That said, if there's any information you would like in addition to what I discuss, let me know. We're always looking to improve this.
Okay.
So starting out in environmental health. Hey, I'm going to take a step back. Would you like me to go into greater detail and kind of describe each of the programs? Or do you just want me to give my normal run-through?
Yeah, just a normal run-through. I'll catch up.
All right. So our six-month restaurant inspection schedule is a little bit behind. We had somebody out for a couple weeks. One of our folks is in training. But the biggest thing is we have our solid waste specialist position isn't filled yet. So our inspectors, our environmental health inspectors, are picking up that slack a bit. So we aren't hitting our target. We should be at 150 by this point, but we're only at 103. I don't foresee a problem making it up. The solid waste program itself, we extended an offer and it was rejected. So we're going on to the next person on our list. We're hoping to get that position filled pretty quick. But the solid waste program is really important for us to start tackling these trash issues that we've had in the county. Animal shelter. Now, we have our numbers in for 2018. I'll be giving a update on a broader update on that at a later time, but I did want to make sure to point out our animal release rates. You can see the chart there. The green line is released. The orange is our euthanized rate. You can see that we are vastly improved over years past. In 2010, nearly 75% of all animals that went into the shelter were euthanized. Wow. We're now at closer to 7%, which puts us in line with national standards and in many instances well past. So this isn't thanks largely to citizens of King County passing the levy, and we've been able to do a lot of great work with that. And, of course, as always, I try to give a shout-out to Laura Mills, our shelter supervisor. She's done amazing work out there. Aside from that, we have Shelter Love software. We're going to be doing an upgrade on our shelter software over what is currently Helion. And we'll be putting out Raskin Rewards pretty quick, which is recognition for members in the community that do work and support animals.
Very good.
Okay, there were some printing errors. I'm not sure if you have the next one, the annual summary.
Yeah, it's on the bottom here. It's right below yours.
Okay.
We have it
I'm
here.
I'm skipping that one because I'm going to be giving that at a later date when I have better comparative data. Our child and parental health programs, WIC, we still aren't quite hitting our WIC target caseload. This isn't unusual.
Okay, WIC is women.
Women, infant, and children.
Infant, children.
Infant, yeah. And children. Okay.
So this is primarily focuses on dietary health for low-income families, specifically for children. It provides healthy food alternatives. This is unusual.
Is that a separate office, WIC, where people come and...
It's in the public health department.
Okay.
So they engage with better than 3,000 families within the community on a reoccurring basis. And it actually, you haven't gotten the larger briefing, but it brings in a good chunk of money.
Is there any overlap between DHS and WIC and all of these different programs? Because I see somewhere along the line, you know, our community out here, all of a sudden one day they end up with a bag full of a white plastic bag with all kinds of food in it, and they trade everything back and forth down here, and I don't know where they get that. Where do they get that bag? And then we have WIC, which is women, infants, and children, and it has to do with food and supplying 3,000 families with food, or
yes.
3,000 participants. Is there, and then, but do these same participants go up to the DHS and get $500 worth of food stamps and a new cell phone? And I mean, I'm wondering how much. There is no central place that says what all this person can get.
Oh.
I hear horror stories about, hey, these people, that's their livelihood now. They don't even bother to go because they couldn't make enough money working to get everything that the government gives them on some program, one or the other. They flat can't do it.
Well, this program is very closely regulated, and there's restrictions on what benefits you can receive between this and other programs. The vast majority of our participants in the WIC program work. In fact, I believe it's 40% carry at least two jobs. This is not a program that feeds the family. It supplements healthy dietary options. So it helps provide like fresh fruits and vegetables for children and milk when they're young. So it's not a we're filling your pantry kind of a program.
Okay. All right. That was my concern.
So we're doing a survey currently looking at hours, and this is broader within public health across the board. Some point in the past, I believe when there was significant financial restrictions, we switched to a 4-day work week and we went to 4-10s. This has not been adequate. For every single Friday, I find people in the parking lot looking for service, whether it's birth certificates or dog licensing or something. And that's just when I'm coming in and out of the building. So it's obvious that there's a need for us to open up. So we're looking at a five-day schedule. We'll probably switch to 5-10s with a staggered work schedule with our staff. But we're doing surveys with the public right now to figure out exactly what that should look like. And I'm going to just skip over permitted pages. It's just a technology solution for texting that's HIPAA compliant. Any questions on that one?
Nope.
All right. Clinical services. This one's a little bit more frustrating for me because we don't have the right numbers. We're trying to get this clarified. If you look, yellow is fiscal year 17-18, and blue is 18-19. The issue is blue is year-to-date, and yellow is the full year. So what you're seeing here isn't actually reflective, isn't an accurate comparison.
We have 3-4 months left. Three months, 3.5 months.
Yes, so immunizations.
Roughly 25%.
Yeah, immunization peaks around February because of school exclusions, but family planning and our STI visits will likely go up. We have gone through school exclusions. We're getting more engagement with community partners, so we're seeing less of an influx within public health. Juvenile justice. I'm not sure if I covered it in my last briefing, but we are now providing all nursing services for juvenile justice for both the detention and the resident side. So we send a nurse over there for a couple hours each day to provide care for the children. We've slightly pulled back our hours in Cave Junction. We'd like to increase that, but we just don't have enough engagement, so we're working on how to increase engagement with the community there.
You don't have enough community need? Is that what you're saying?
The numbers suggest it's not enough clients are coming through the door, but there is a need. So we're just not finding a way to...
Your outreach. You're probably going to step up outreach or something.
Yeah, we're trying to figure out the best way to do that. It's a tough community to get into.
It is. They don't like to be bothered.
And we're doing an upgrade and an update at our clinic. One of our nurses, Jennifer Kowalczyk, managed to get a grant, so we're doing some painting, and we're buying some stuff that we can move as well, so new furniture and stuff, trying to make it a little bit more welcoming. Still looks like an old 70s surgical unit.
This is in Cave Junction?
No, that was here.
Yeah.
And you're making sure that nothing is permanent?
Other than the paint on the walls, yeah.
Okay, all right, good.
Staffing. I have a staffing slide later, so I'll cover that in just a bit. The other thing is we are pulling together a reproductive health council. We aren't sure exactly what it looks like. It's going to be part of program element 46, which is Title 10 Reproductive Health Services. And we'll be having members of the any clinic or agency that provides reproductive health services eventually will be welcome to be a part of it. Right now, we're sticking with state grant-funded agencies. So this is part of a state mandate.
Okay. Well, and, of course, measles has been a huge one in
Our numbers are
the border up there. Are you guys seeing some?
Significantly.
Yeah.
And in fact, if it didn't come out today or yesterday, you'll likely see some in the paper because we've been getting a lot of reporters calling about it.
No problem keeping up, though.
Oh, no. Our numbers are way up. We anticipated it. Every time there's an outbreak, people start to recognize the need, and we see increased vaccination rates.
And is there still... We live in a county that lives rogue. Is there still a significant number that are trying to not vaccinate?
Highest in the state.
Really?
Yes, last year our county jumped up to be the highest in the state. Yeah, we're number one. We're going through a number of efforts to try and help educate and engage with the community. We have programs where we're meeting with physicians in the area, and we're helping to train them on how to better engage and engage with vaccine-hesitant parents.
Right.
Because it's tough. Even for physicians who do this, it's easy to kind of disregard and belittle these views. And it's been well-received.
Good.
And we're hoping it helps make a difference. We also did a radio show last year. We're likely doing a radio show out in Cave Junction where myself and a couple of physicians go on the radio and do a call, and then we just engage with the community and answer questions.
Good.
So here it was not very lively. I suspect that may be different in Cave Junction. We'll see. See how it goes.
Right.
Where was I? Oh, emergency preparedness. So we're going to be conducting a medical countermeasures exercise. This is part of the Oregon Health Authority emergency preparedness program. And our primary partners are going to be Aspire and North Valley High School. And that's going to be in April. We also sent a number of folks, as I believe you're all aware, down to the campfire to help staff the animal evacuation shelter that they had down there. And we're doing updates on a number of plans. The COOP plan, which is countywide, each department is doing that, but we're also doing a new plan for the animal evacuation shelter. Last summer, that was a big deal, and we want to make sure we don't run into the same issues we had then.
Do you want to continue when your annual evacuation was out at the fairgrounds?
Yes.
And what changes did you want to make out there?
We just want to make sure we're able to stand up quicker, and we also want to engage better with some of our local community partners. There's a number of charities in the community that we got up and we went from standing still to running in no time flat last year, and we didn't engage everybody that we really needed to engage. So we want to bring them to the table before this summer fire season.
We also noticed that it was starting to back up against the fair, and when it backed up against the fair, it's, hey, you got to get those animals out of here.
Well, so that was never
actually... The fire lasted longer than it was supposed to.
It was... So that became an issue in the community. That was a public relations failure, because there was never actually an issue. We had a plan. We were taking Jackson counties when they had events, country crossings.
Right.
And if we had gone up until the fair, we would have shifted over to
their side. You had a plan to take them back over to there.
Yeah, and this had been planned well in advance. But somebody heard that the fair was going to put these poor animals out of a home, and that was never the case. And we just had trouble getting ahead of the message.
Right. Never been there.
And jail. Oh, yeah. So we're doing OHP enrollment. Right now we're just doing it with women coming out of the jail. One of the staff goes over every Friday and gets them enrolled in OHP prior to them going out.
OHP is?
The Oregon Health Plan.
Okay.
So...
When, so coming out of jail, they're going to get automatically enrolled in health insurance.
Yeah, rather than having the delay. So we see a significant issue with people leaving the jail and not being able to continue, say, counseling for sobriety or things of that nature. And a lot of people tend to fall through the cracks because it can take months to get re-enrolled if they don't know where to go or what to do.
Because it stops when they go in?
Yeah, well, it's supposed to stop the second they walk through that door. They automatically, that's by federal law, we're not allowed to provide OHP coverage, which I'm sure you both are aware of the issues that arise from that and the potential liability for the county because of it.
Yeah, the sheriff had concerns, obviously.
Yes. So, this is just a way.
Just looking at it from the outside looking in, we've got people all over this county that don't have health insurance, and yet you go to jail, you come out with an automatic, you're guaranteed health insurance when you come out.
Not how it works. Not at all.
Because when I see here OHP enrollment, yeah, to make sure that that when they get released from jail, that they're on the Oregon Health Plan enrollment, they're enrolled and they take care of all the blue tape and the sticky things that have to be done. And we just... handle that all while they're in jail. It's a benefit for them going to jail. We're going to let them loose.
With tell us how it is then, Michael.
So a big part of it is fiscal. There's a significant recidivism for folks who leave jail and don't have access to health care, especially mental health care support. So by getting them enrolled in the system, it helps reduce the likelihood that they're going to go back in. These same benefits are offered to anybody that isn't in jail, and they can call us or come to public health and we'll get them enrolled as well. And it's not just us. There's other other organizations in the community that would get them enrolled. There's very few people that wouldn't qualify for OHP within this community, and the folks that don't have it oftentimes aren't aware, or there's a trust issue, or there's other issues with them coming in and getting it. Almost everybody that we enroll that are in jail are folks who were already on OHP. And now that they're leaving, we're just getting them re-put into the system. So that when they leave, they don't lose access to the support services.
But isn't that countering exactly what you said? Boy, you know, the recidivism, or whatever they call that, is higher if you don't have Oregon Health Plan. But you just said most of them had Oregon Health Plan going in, and we just want to make sure they're re-enrolled. It evidently didn't stop them from getting into jail in the first place.
No, but it's another reset or an opportunity, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah, when they go to jail, they receive support. And they, hopefully, optimally, they stop using drugs. They get off alcohol or whatever the issue is, or they begin receiving mental health support. When they leave jail, just having OHP doesn't mean they were receiving those benefits before. But when they leave jail, are they going to continue to get the support that they had that is going to put them on the right track? Or are they going to immediately go back to the life and the activities that would put them in jail?
Is there a strike 3-year out that we've tried that with you 3 times and it just doesn't work?
We haven't even contemplated.
You don't have gone that far.
Okay. Yeah, the lift of enrolling somebody isn't significant. We just need to go down and kind of walk them through the paperwork and get them put in. Grant submissions, I reviewed those previously, so I'm not going to walk through them, but as you both know, we are working through the process of getting a grant writer. The job description's done. You should be seeing it from HR here pretty quick. And staffing update, if you go to the next slide, the last slide, we have a home visit nurse. You'll see that one in red. We have somebody that's accepted that position, so within a week or two, we will be 100% staffed.
Be all staffed, yeah.
That was actually one of my annual goals. We were at, I believe it was around 60% staffed, and my annual goal is to get up to 90. We're already there, and we'll be at 100. We're adding 2 additional positions as well, the solid waste specialist and the grant writer. So,
you know, it looks to me like this is shaping up that you're going to fill your 5 minutes at State of the County in a very positive way.
That is what I'm hoping.
Yeah, and let's just hope this year you can talk.
Last year
he was so sick he couldn't talk.
So I thought I had gotten something.
How ironic.
Oh, you know what?
Public health director got laryngitis and can't speak to you today.
Oh, only about half the county found that incredibly hilarious.
Humorous,
and found the need to point it out to me. But I discovered something. Last year I had a sore throat, headache, just congested, sick, and I lost my voice. And this year, at the exact same time, I'm feeling the same way. And I did not realize, I'm pretty sure I have allergies. I've never had them before.
Right, but adult onset.
See,
right?
That's why we moved, because State of the County would be just probably right about now, but we knew that was going to hit. So what we've done is we went ahead and moved it a month.
I appreciate that, because if I lost my voice and I couldn't speak at 2 of them
two
in a row, I would never live it down.
No, it'd become the norm.
Well, good job. Thank you. I don't have any questions for you. You're doing a great job over there.
I appreciate it. We're going to be tightening this briefing up a little bit and trying to trim it down and just get to the more relevant points. But
Okay, very good. Sounds good.
And I believe I'm next on your agenda.
Right. Is the next item is item 3,
advisory board
minutes, which I think we have in front of us.
Yes, there is something that came out of our recent advisory board.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually a request from AMR, our ambulance service for the county, and they have a vehicle a four-wheel drive ambulance that they would like to get an exemption to keep on board until it is replaced. It's technically out of its service mileage capacity, but they have a desperate need for a four-wheel drive.
It doesn't have any issues, does it? I mean, it starts and runs. It just reaches mileage.
Yes.
Right.
And it's important to keep that mileage in account, because you don't want your vehicles, you know, consistently reaching heavy mileage rates. That said, this is a special case, and it was voted and approved by the EMS board, asking that you validate. And
so what? So what are they asking us to do? Just say that we waive their mileage requirement for right now?
Yes, and if you approve that, we'll send it over to legal, and they'll draft up whatever letter has to be drafted.
Right. Amendment to the contract.
I have no problem with this.
Yeah, not at all.
So, yep. I don't know when we have to.
Yeah, both my vehicles are outside of their mileage.
I don't know if we need a motion for that or not. I'm not sure.
I believe so. Yeah. Or if you want to wait on the motion and just verbally give an approval for legal to draft.
Yeah, let's just verbally give an approval for.
So that we have we're approving the proper thing.
We're approving it to go to legal. Okay. That could probably be the best way to word that.
Yeah, so that's in the minutes. And so, yeah, you've got your delay. And then they'll just make it formal.
Yeah.
Do you want to keep a copy of this?
If you'd like, I can take it over to legal or you.
Super.
You need all a right. copy of that, Trish? Because we talked about it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, make sure she gets
whip
a copy.
One out.
Appreciate it.
All right. Is there anything? I'm not.
I just the various minutes, and we'll just read through these and sign them.
Is based.
What's that?
Animal shelter, EMS,
and EMS,
animal shelter, and advisory committee. Yeah, probably at least two EMSs and one animal shelter.
So you read them and ask me questions if you have any. Is that how this works?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, right. If we have any questions, if not, we just sign them and away we go.
Caught up.
I'll make a copy.
Wendy highlighted the.
Right, the important stuff.
Yep. Yeah, she. Let me see. January, November. In January, no, two different. She talked about cat licensing, not viable. The board will advocate for a microchip clinic instead. And then it's recommending to the Board of Commissioners that animal control be moved out of the Sheriff's Department.
I'm not understanding what a microchip would do for a stray cat other than tell you where he's at.
It would tell you who the owner is if it's registered, so you could return it.
Okay. That's the value there.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, all right. I didn't look
at that. Michael, do you have anything to say on the microchip clinic for cats? What does it do for them?
So the recommendation from the board was that a cat licensing effort would be prohibitive and wouldn't get much of a return on investment. That said, only about 2%, not even 2%, I think it was 2, cats that have come into the shelter actually were microchipped and able to return to their parents, or to their owners, sorry.
Right.
So it was, a microchip clinic would increase the number of microchip cats, which would mean we'd be able to identify owners quicker, which means we'd be able to push them out of shelter, decreasing overall cost.
And is there a grant available for that kind of piece of equipment, or...?
It's actually pretty cheap. We can do microchipping for about $5 a piece.
Oh wow!
That said, they exist. We don't want to become a direct competition with the public entities that already do this. I think the cheapest you can find is outside Walmart or attached to Walmart. There's a clinic that'll do it for about $20 or close there. The thought was if we had like maybe a voluntary cat licensing effort where they would come in, they would get rabies vaccine, they would get microchipped.
And register so you could find them by picture or whatever.
Yeah, and either we could do it and we could do a number of things, or we could look at maybe having a private organization come in and do it. And they would just work through us. Not sure how that would look. I always get a little wary whenever we're looking at a potential direct competition.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thanks for the update.
Is that it?
That's it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much, Commissioner.
You bet.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Good luck getting through legal. on your way by. Liaison report. I do have some Rural Planning Commission minutes here, but I kind of already briefed you on that one subdivision that got approved out off of Hugo Road, and that Ron Wright was reelected as chair for the 17th or 19th year. Mm-hmm. Long-serving member. But anything from you for liaison reports?
We didn't have a fair board meeting last week after we discussed that master plan RFQ. That was canceled because of snow. And then I go to Grass Pass Airport board meeting tonight. So really haven't had any board meetings to go for. I did attend the manager's meeting yesterday. I was like one with a bunch of subsects and two, but I went on too long. I was there 35 to 40 minutes, and I don't want to be there that long. And, of course, they agreed after I left that we probably, and we talked, Arthur and I talked a little bit about this morning, that maybe that I go to some meetings, I assure you have, that where at AOC where it says, you know, we will convene at such and such a time, and at 8:05 it's going to be this, and 8:15. Mm-hmm. It gives a time specific for presentation.
Oh, right.
So in other words, if the commissioners are going to be there, they can look at what they've asked of us and said, okay, you get 15 minutes. And at the end of that 15 minutes, we're going to move on. I think that would give them adequate time to talk about what they want. Mm-hmm. And then it would also shorten down myself and Commissioner Morgan have a tendency to get long-winded. So I think it would be very valuable to them to say, okay, fine, you guys. But like I told Arthur yesterday, I said, I didn't want to be there that long. Right. But you just kept asking questions, and I was on the thing. But I says, I like to tell stories, and I shouldn't have told stories. I should just, you know, not be entertaining. I should just walk out. So I think, you know, if we can put maybe the times on that, I think it would probably be valuable. I think it would help us out as much as them.
And
straighten all that.
Well, and maybe come up with a system for even these meetings.
Correct.
A starred system, whatever.
That's a good deal. And that may be valuable, you know, in these meetings here, so that we can better let our department heads know that they don't have to be here until 9:45 or something of that sort.
When it's
predictable. That might be pretty valuable if we make an exerted effort to do that. I didn't go to Lipsick. I don't know. I think Commissioner Morgan is the
official
deal for Lipsick. The last time I did go to Lipsick is they gave unanimously approved a letter of support for House Bill 2382. So
that's good.
That's good.
I went over to RVCOG last week, the Rogue Valley Council of Governments, and they had a good presentation from the Shake Alert people that they're going to expand. And part of that project, when they're placing equipment on a mountain, they're going to put up a fire watch camera, and the fire alert, I think, is the name of the system. But they're going to have a camera that is movable and zoomable to find lightning strikes or other sources of ignition, and immediately start planning the suppression effort. They have it working very successfully down in San Diego County, in California, and some other counties in California. And so I thought it was a really nice addition to the Shake Alert.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea for Shake Alert in general. Mm-hmm.
I wonder why we owe the pleasure, sir.
No, it's all pleasure is all mine. I was just down at HR talking to those peeps.
Well, we're just finishing up a meeting that your name wasn't on.
No, no business.
We were just talking about different committees that we had been to recently, and I just finished up. You?
Yeah, that's all I've had. I guess we're on to number five, right?
Yep. Additional matters. There was I have the minutes from the Lipsick. Let's see, it says in October the secure treatment program in the jail began serving women instead of men for a 90-day trial period. That's relevant to you.
Yeah, very much so.
increased female jail prison usage. About 23% of the inmates are female. And it's been increasing statewide. Anyway.
That's been a subject for a long time because of female crime rate is escalating, and they only have one. Is there only one female prison?
Yeah.
We're joined, by the way, by Sheriff Dave Daniels here, and just happened to pop in. He was in the building, so.
Yeah, the female inmates have been growing across the state, and we were serving the male population in there, largely due to just size constraints, logistics there, but because of the rise in the women in prison population, we decided to try serving the females in the treatment capacity. And in speaking with the director, Gowran, we're up to about a 75% success rate, which is way above the male rate. So we're providing, I think, a better service and getting a better return on investment. Currently, Director Gowran is putting in for a $152,000 grant to do some modifications construction-wise within the jail to open up the visiting area and turning it into a pod.
Because we don't use that visiting.
We don't use it.
Yeah.
Because it's the old-style visiting where you have the telephone and the window and the glass. Now it's all via kiosk and electronics. And if we get that grant, we'll spend it by the end of the year, and we will open up another pod in the jail and then treat both. We'll have a treatment center for men and for women, all paid for by the Criminal Justice Commission. No local tax dollars into that.
Good work.
Yeah, very good. Other Lipsick info, they did elect Ryan Mulkins as chair, Jim Goodwin as vice, and Lily Morgan as the liaison from the Board of Commissioners. Anyway, that's kind of that. Anything on matters from commissioners?
Yeah, I had some comments more from the public than anything else, and that was the use of phones during meetings that, you know, we continually tap phones and look at phones and read phones, and that is very apparent to the people that have taken off time from their home to come and testify for 3 minutes. I think that phones, I leave my phone over here just so I'm not distracted by it, and I'm making eye contact with the people, and yet I can look at my colleagues and not necessarily pointing a finger at you or Lily, but you're my only two colleagues. And you're on the phone, and I, you know, those phones are relatively new to my world. We never had that, and I think, you know, like I say, my goal is public perception of county government, and I think they deserve our undivided attention during WBS and or
That's
these meetings
point.
Here. And I just leave my phone over here, and I, and by golly, if there's something, if I would, I would feel horrible if I got to my phone and found out that my wife was en route to Rogue Valley Medical Center, and I wasn't there to answer it immediately and jump up and go. However, you know, I still have I'm hired by the folks out here to pay attention, and that's what I want to do. Another thing is I didn't know if commissioners wanted to do anything for the Boatneck Parade. If so, we're going to have to probably make an application if there's any interest in it. Don't need to answer that right now. Historically, I think Cheryl Walker used to ride her horse, and Keith Heck would ride in a convertible or something. But the last couple of years, I don't think commissioners, we didn't do anything last year. And I know that Cheryl and Keith didn't do anything the year before that. So I don't know if there's any interest in it. You and I have both done the thing with the city council and the fire truck for year after year after year. And mayor, you know, going through and so on and so forth. But, you know, I didn't know if it was something that we needed to do, or if we're not there, nobody's gonna notice.
Yeah, I think it's worth discussing, and I don't know what that looked like, but I'd like, if we did something, it'd be nice to do it together.
Yeah,
and not have
right, not just one commissioner. Uh-huh. You know, if either all three of us or none at all.
But, yeah,
you know, I don't think, like I said, I really don't think if we weren't there that somebody's gonna get down there. And, Mommy, why aren't the commissioners in the parade? I really I really don't see that happening, okay? So that might be just the way we look at it that way. And let's see.
And you could almost try and involve a department, whether it be Parks or someone, and a little bit less us and more the whole county.
Maybe
as
a county, thing, put together a float from Josephine County.
Right. Celebrating some of our successes.
And maybe that's something that the manager's meeting they need to talk about.
Yeah.
When the next person goes to the manager's meeting for their brief five-minute interjection.
All right. Well, if there's nothing else.
Nothing further for me.
Then I'll go ahead and end this meeting at 10:26.